All right, you think we're going to have any more technical difficulties today?
I think we're good.
No, you don't think Volt's going to break something else?
No.
I don't think Volt wants the podcast to happen. That's his day. I'm wearing his shirt.
Oh, yeah, so. That's right.
Yeah.
Hello, welcome to the Disnog Pod. I am your host, Jeff Hill.
And I am the other host, Kirby McElveen.
And today, what are we doing?
We are going to be talking about top skills for young disc dogs. In particular, we're going to pick out three that are our favorites and really just kind of talk about foundational training in general, specifically for puppies.
Yeah, puppy training. It's so fun. I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
That's so funny because it's always like, for me, I feel like it's a chore. It's grown on me. It's really grown on me a lot. And I think a lot of that has to do with Sora, because Sora was so fun to train to do it, and like I finally felt like everything aligned with her.
Okay. I think part of it could be because when you first were training dogs, you were having puppies when you were a kid.
Yeah. Oh, and I wasn't a natural dog trainer
and
either.
That's a tough thing. I mean, I didn't have dogs when I was a kid. I can only imagine how difficult it would be as a kid to train a puppy. That has to be really tough.
A hyper puppy.
Yeah. I mean, you had multiple.
Yeah, so, and I didn't. I wasn't very natural at the dog training thing either.
Can you be as a kid? I don't know. Like a young kid.
I don't know. I kind of think you can. I just don't think I really understood like psychology enough. I mean, I was pretty young when I started dog sports in general. I was 7.
Yeah.
So. That's really young to understand.
I was closer to 70.
Okay, you weren't closer to 70. That's actually not accurate. That is so not accurate. It's ridiculous. That's not true. Don't lie. But, I don't know. But the other thing, too, is like, I feel like I needed dog training skills to get my first couple of dogs to be good. And I struggled because they were... Because Sketch and Flash, my first couple dogs, were so talented that they really got by without a lot of dog training skill. Like, I didn't have to train them that much because they were awesome. I did a lot more training with Flash, but it was, like, trick training. It was stuff that I could find more, like, on YouTube. I don't think when I started there was a lot of information out there about foundation training in general.
No, and it wasn't like YouTube didn't exist.
Well,
I mean, think about that.
When I was little, it didn't exist, but right, when it did exist,
right.
I mean, it was
but it was
very
at
basic.
Its infancy, and people weren't posting things.
It was a big deal to see somebody train a dog to catch a disc, let alone, you know, turn around, hightail it back, and hand it off to you, and
drop.
Like, drop all these other like complex behaviors that we teach now. That was not even existent at the time.
And
you
couldn't
find that information.
I think for you, the other big thing that I give you a lot of credit for is that you didn't have somebody that was helping you training in your house, really. I mean, it was you doing all the main training.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, that's impressive.
I was actually trying to undo some of my parents' training. That's why they ended up stopping playing the sketch, because we couldn't all agree on the same word and the same cue and everything. That's a challenge of playing multiple dogs, but we could talk about that later. So for me, it's been a journey with foundation training, but I've come to love it. I've come to appreciate it, and honestly, with especially like Flair and Sora. Sora was much easier. Flair was a lot harder, I feel like, but man, I just pushed through, and Flair's really easy to play with now, actually. And I attribute that to working so hard on her foundations when she was like under 18 months old, pretty much like, you know, as soon as I got her up until 18 months, I mean, it was all foundation training. I still do foundations training, but you know, she's so much easier to play with. Sora's so easy to play with. And we'll talk about Link and Cheeky later, of course, but so tell us about why you love it. And cause I think you had a little bit of a happier time with it in the beginning and you were passionate about it pretty quick.
Sure. Yeah. When I started training dogs, when I actually decided.
Yeah. What dog was that when you started training dogs?
The first dog I feel like I truly tried to train was Slate.
And he was a hard one.
And he was tough.
Yeah.
And I still liked it. So it was something that In the moment, I don't know how much I was liking it, but I think now, or in no time at all, within a year or so of working on training with him, what I started to like was the results.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I don't want to talk ahead of you, but I was thinking, yeah, I think what you really liked was seeing the end result and being able to play with him, and it was easy after.
And the foundation training goes forever. So if you get the proper foundation and you put the work into it, in 10 years, your dog is still going to be using those foundation things that you taught them. And it just, the rewards just keep coming year after year after year. So yeah. I really put a lot of time in it. I think I, especially for a disc dog trainer, I think I put in a very, very, very heavy amount of foundation training, a lot of different things all over the place. And I reinforce them even as they're adults. I still see myself doing things with Muse, and she's 12 years old, and I see myself doing these things with her when I'm working with her still, and I'm like, she doesn't need any of this. She already knows how to do all this stuff, but I keep reinforcing.
Oh, I still have to reinforce it, especially with Sora, who's a border collie, who, in my experience anyway, border collies, especially the smarter they are, the more they want to change the game on you, and they're like, yeah, I know we've been doing it this way for like 3 years, and it's been super cool, but today, I kind of feel like changing it up. So I constantly have to go back and reward Sora, but at least I feel like I'm armed with the knowledge and the skills to do that now. Whereas when I was a kid, I think I would have been fighting the disc from her. Like, you know, I had to fight with Sketch a Flash to get the disc back in place.
Right.
it's been a journey sure.
Yeah. So I truly love it. The results are just, and seeing them progress day after day after day before you even get to a competition and they haven't even competed, and you already see where they're headed to, and you know how the future is going to be. You just, it feels so good.
And I have to say, I credit a lot of my foundation training material to you and Jen,
thank you.
Who you know taught me a lot of that, because I think, you know, I was maybe strong in some of the, I don't want to call it more advanced because it's not necessarily more advanced, but like some of the other skills, I was fairly advanced at throwing and routine building and those types of things, but I was so lacking in that foundational skill set, and you helped me a lot. And I learned a lot of it with Volt, but I think it really came to fruition with Sora because I kind of had it figured out by then what I was doing, and it all kind of really came together with her, which is why Sora is such a great toss and fetch dog. Like, her handoff's awesome. She drops when I want her to drop. Like, we have the whole thing figured out. But that is a lot, and thanks to you.
Well, I'm glad it helped.
and I do have to mention, I do have a foundation course, which is a lot of your stuff, some of my stuff thrown in there.
Gotta go to that.
I'll put a link in the YouTube description. If you go to flyingk9s.com, you can find your way on there, just message me or email me, and I can send it right to you. But it is just like chock full of all kinds of information and all different skills, because there's a lot of skills that go into foundation.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that people don't even think about. She could be in the sport for 10, 20 years. There's people that have been in the sport longer than us that I think don't know half of what we do.
Oh, I agree. I think a lot of people are really surprised when they find out, because I've had some people ask me, pretty high level people ask me, what do I do to get this or that? And I think people are starting to see it more because it's coming across now on multiple dogs.
Right.
It's not just Torch. It's not just Sora. Now you see Flair doing it. You see Link starting to have some breakthroughs. And I think it's probably similar with you. I mean, yeah, Muse was really awesome. That was probably the first dog most people saw you have like, whoa, that dog's foundations are just killer. But then each dog after that, you know, Zen, Bon Bon, Key, all of them, even Punky, they're all, you know, like little robots on toss and fetch.
Right, and that was,
you know, their foundation skills are really kind of like robots.
That was a place that I made a huge mistake with Enzo. So right before Slate was the one where I decided I had to start training. Because with Enzo, I didn't teach him much of the foundation. I didn't really teach him anything. I wasn't a dog trainer. I just wanted to play Frisbee with my dog. And what happened was he was pretty good at everything.
Yeah.
He was good at everything, but he was not great at any of the skills. He was just good at them, and it was good enough for me.
I got by. You got by, and you did pretty well, where I think like in the disc dog world, you can get pretty far without a lot of foundational skills.
You can.
If your dog's reasonably talented and you're a reasonably good thrower and, you know, you've got some common sense, you can get pretty far without foundational training. But I think if you're in this a long time and you get multiple dogs,
and you want to have longevity.
And there's longevity and you want to have consistency too. I mean,
if you want to be able to get every dog that you have and qualify and go to the finals, you're not going to be able to do that just by winging it.
The day you lose a competition because you had to fight your dog at the line for the disc, giving it back or something like that.
Something flustered you.
Something silly, right?
That shouldn't have happened. And you know it shouldn't have happened.
If you had foundational training, exactly, it wouldn't have happened. Then you really see that. And I think we had, at that time, by the time of, you know, Enzo, by the time of, like, Flash, we were seeing what we really were missing, which was that foundation skill.
And by realizing what was missing, I started realizing what could have been. And I didn't want to go through that again, because what I did was, it's like I cheated my dog. It was my fault.
Yes. And that's exactly how I felt. I felt the same way, because I had Sketch, right? And a lot like Enzo.
Same.
Really spectacular.
Same kind of stuff.
And no offense, Enzo, but even more than like just having all the skills, Sketch was so superb at catching.
He was. And Enzo was not.
Like, Sketch was kind of like, you know, B tier, all the skills around, but then like catching was S tier. Like, he was beyond everybody.
And that is
everybody.
Number one.
And I felt like.
And if you have that, you're given a gift.
Yes,
the gift of catch.
Well, I did get the gift of catch, but the problem is our foundation training was so bad, we could never get five throws in toss and fetch.
Same.
We could, like, we were, and I felt like this is so frustrating, because if I was just a better trainer, we could have this all figured out, and I got the best dog in the world sitting in front of me. But unfortunately, by the time I kind of learned those skills, and I started teaching Sketch, and Sketch and I were more on a rhythm, he was kind of like 9, 10 years old by the time that all happened. So he sort of aged out, so to speak.
Yes, and if you get them to a certain age with certain patterns that they have, it is so difficult to get them back from it. You can.
Oh, yeah.
You can always improve it. You can always improve. I always tell people never give up, but it is difficult to really bring a dog back that hasn't been trained properly,
right?
And then just turn them completely around and make them this perfectly trained dog. It's nearly impossible.
It's really, really hard. And that's why, like, I know a lot of people, there's some misconceptions, there's some things that, you know, oh, you don't want to do disc dog training, you know, at a young age, you don't want them jumping, of course, for the safety factors. I agree on all the safety pieces of that. You don't want them jumping, you don't want them doing, you know, overexerting themselves, things like that. But I think, and this is my hot take, this is my big hot take, is that I think all the skills that you need for your dog to win a world championship, I think they can all physically be trained before 18 months old safely.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I think most of the things that you need, it all can be done when they're a puppy.
Yes.
And it's strategically better to do so, because building the right habits is better than allowing them to build bad habits or no habits at all.
Because then you're trying to fix them. You're trying to fix it or
change
it. Yeah,
you don't want to be fixing it. You want to be molding it.
If you're not creating the habits, it is going to be bad habits, because they're just going to do it.
Yeah,
the dog's going to figure out something on their own.
And I'll tell you what, it's a lot easier to confine and make some adjustments when they're a little tiny puppy. It's a lot easier to wait them out on dropping the disc when they're a little tiny puppy and they're not very strong. Versus, like, when they're big, like, I'm just thinking Link in my mind.
If I started now, what are you gonna do?
40 pounds. If he didn't drop, he'd be pulling me across the yard. He's stronger than me. I'd have so much trouble getting him to drop. And, you know, it would be such a pain. I'd be tugging and fighting him.
Right. And you don't want to do that.
And I don't want to do that. And it's so much harder when they're bigger. So, you know,
and then it's not as fun for them. It's not as fun for you.
You get frustrated.
And you get frustrated. They get frustrated.
Yeah.
And then you have to try to just figure it out. And instead of just having the whole path created early on.
Right. I always kind of describe it as I sort of funnel them into the right behaviors.
Yes.
I mean, I think I don't know if people know us well enough to know that we use positive reinforcement. We don't do, you know, corrections or e-collars or any of that kind of stuff. So that might be a good note to right, share out there. We do all positive reinforcement, and it's really kind of making adjustments to, you know, maybe they're on leash to make sure they don't run off, or maybe we play in a smaller area to make sure they're not running so far away if they're going to do that. So those types of things. So funneling them into getting the behaviors we want, rewarding them.
And I do, to some degree, let them choose some of the path that they like to take. It depends on what. For example, like a handoff, exactly where they like to bring it to me and things like that. I've found that every single dog, even if you train them the exact same way, have their own little nuances, a little thing that they might want to bring it to your right side or your left side or something like that.
Well, that's like Sora. I mean, I do the give and go handoff.
Certain things.
And that's a different, I agree. I think, yeah, it's totally up to the dog.
I like to give them some leeway and make them really feel like they're part of the team as well.
So that they have somebody.
Because of course they are. But, you know, a lot of people are like, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I don't want to feel that way. I want to help mold them. And sort of like whenever you're a kid in school and you're learning the material. Some kids learn differently than others, and some want to retain the knowledge, some don't care. You know, you try to get all the kids to learn, but then when you graduation time, you have a bell-shaped curve of what you end up with, right?
Right.
And you're going to end up with that with your dogs.
Well, sometimes
also.
They get there a different way,
yes,
too, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, so some people are going to be more artistic. Some are going to be more athletic. Some are going to be more scientific.
Well, I was kind of like thinking like math. Like, you know, some people really are good and quick with doing it in their head. Others are, they have to write it down.
Right.
Or like they can't really think of it in their head. They have to write it down. Like, just sort of those different things. There's different ways of learning. I mean, I have that with Sora. She's the only one I do the give and go handoff with. I mean,
oh, and that's another thing.
She prefers it, and it actually works better for her. Even though I kind of would like her to go around, that would be nice. It would make my life a little easier, make my job a little easier. I'd have a little bit more of an easier time throwing it. Have all the time in the world while she goes around me.
That'll be a fun podcast talking about give and go versus going around versus going around the other way. Teaching them, do you teach them?
Yeah, let us know. Do you want to hear about those kinds of strategies? Do you guys want to hear about like different toss and fetch strategies that we have? I mean, I think there's a lot of different ones.
Anything
there
can be used for all of the games as well, too. I mean, I go out there whenever I do something like, let's say, spot landing. If you've seen me play it, you'll see me sometimes do a give and go. You'll see me send the dog around one way. I'll send the dog around the other way.
Yeah.
And because if I have to throw to a circle this way, I'll send them maybe that way if I want to send them that way. Or I might send them this way to go to a, you know, one of the circles on this side. Or I might just do a give and go if it's right in front of me. It just depends on how I...
Where the dog is,
what angle they're coming to me. Yeah,
right. The wind's going, and
absolutely
maybe
push all
the
of
disc
that
or
stuff.
You're like, this is probably going to really swing that way. Maybe I need to send them around the other way to get a better angle. Yeah, that's all really important stuff, and that's part of why. And I think you do this too. Is I train them all the options.
Yep.
So like, even though Flair and her toss and fetch specifically, I have her go around every time. However, there's every once in a while that I'll do a little give and go. And the situation for that is if we're running out of time, sometimes she's a five throw, 40 yard dog. Sometimes she's a 4.5 throw, you know, where there's 4 throws in the 40 yards. And then there's a short one, you know, maybe 10 yards, maybe 20 yards. It just depends. So, but if I'm doing a 10 yarder and we're cutting it really close on time, I'll do a give and go with her because it's just quicker, and I don't have to put as much effort into the thrower. It's not as, I don't have to get it completely perfect. I just have to get it out in front of her and make sure it's kind of low.
I know she catches it.
Well, and I know she's probably going to do an outrun if I throw it low, which is almost a guaranteed catch with Flair. But if I throw it low enough, she'll probably do a little bit of an outrun. So I need to make sure I have time for her to come back for that fifth throw. So there's a lot of like things I'm thinking about as far as time and what strategy I use. But that's why I teach them all different ways, is so that, you know, sometimes you need to do the give and go. That's the difference between getting the throw off or not. Or sometimes they're around you the other way, or,
the more tools you got in your toolbox, the easier it is to get the job done.
That's exactly true. So let's talk about some of these, tools and skills.
Top 3 skills that we teach our puppies.
Yeah, I think that was the goal here. Is kind of
and we haven't reviewed this, each other. So we, we're probably gonna have some overlap.
This could be a surprise.
Yeah, we might have the exact same three. We don't know. So,
and you're gonna list them in order, right? Which, like, ooh, one is the most important.
Most important.
Two is okay, not as important. Third is, you know,
okay,
less important than the first two. So I'll let you go first. I think just say what they are, and then I'll tell you what mine are, and we can kind of compare and argue and discuss and fight over it.
So I am going to go, it's really tough. I am going to go number one, teaching a drop or an out, whatever your terminology would be.
Okay, that's not what I thought you were going to say, but
number two is retrieving. Mm. And number three, catching.
Okay.
So catching ability, basically teaching how to catch different things. And there's a whole lot just in that part, but I would say those are my top three.
Okay. That's those really interesting three, because I didn't think you were going to pick drop first.
I'll tell you why I put it there.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I train. And there's a reason
it's the first thing I train now.
Right?
It's the first. Oh, I have a reason it's the first thing I train now. Oh, there's a reason.
And I've never had a problem with any of the dogs dropping. So I've just done that.
See,
from
I've
the
had
beginning,
several.
Always from the beginning.
So that's going to lead into, you already know. Can you guess what
number one is drop?
Number one is drop. Absolutely. That's the most important thing. I can make up for catching skills if they will drop the disc. Oh, it's the most important. Don't even get me started. Well, I'm starting. We're getting started.
I have a very interesting thing about drop, though.
This is the purpose of the podcast, because is to get me started.
For me to teach drop, I have to teach some other things. So it's kind of like a bit of a combo item. But, okay,
so
what's your number two?
I think it's really interesting that you put retrieval on there. Retrieval's not in my top three. I don't even know if it's in my top five. But my second one, I think, is... it's hard to describe in like one word, but it's kind of the ability to quickly refocus from one thing to another. Like, for example, when you see a dog when they catch a disc and they about face and are ready to do another behavior, like that quickness, the sharpness to go from one trick to the next, that is, I don't know how to describe that skill. I guess it's like a switching focus type skill. So to me, I look at it like that is when they catch the Frisbee and about face and then hightail it back.
That's like a retrieve, though.
But I don't care about them holding the disc and bringing it to me. That's the piece that I don't care about. So it's kind of like retrieval, but without the physical piece of them holding the disc. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the third one, I agree with you, catching. They got to be able to catch.
and that seems obvious, but it is not obvious, because I had
really
dogs
hard
that I did not teach to catch, Enzo. And if I had taught him how to catch properly, what could have been?
I think he ended up pretty good, though.
He was pretty good. His physicality made up for my inability to train. And I would just say I had no ability to train, no interest in training.
I think I could say the same.
Yeah.
Or like Flash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sketch too.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day when we used to say, oh, we're not dog trainers.
I know.
We're not dog trainers. We just throw Frisbees at the dogs.
Yeah. We're disc riders. We're not dog trainers.
We're disc riders. We're not dog trainers. But what was so funny about that is we're not even disc people either. Like,
right. We're not.
We didn't come from a disc background.
Neither one of us disc golf, do human freestyle.
Yeah. I mean, you played a little bit as a sculpt, but it was kind of casual.
It was after I started disc, and it was just, and I did dog discs so that
it was more like
throw
a practice, a way of practicing your discs.
And it was the only reason I did it is because the park I practiced my throws just happens to have a disc golf course, and hardly anyone ever used it. So I would just go there, and every once in a while, I'd just be like, and I'd take a friend or something and just go do some throwing. Yeah. So I got some more practice.
I think I did disc golf one time. Well, no. I take that back.
I've
done it a couple times. But one time that I did it locally with a friend, and I brought Flash. And of course, you know, Flash likes the disc, but he wouldn't go after a disc golf throw. Like, I could distract him and give him his own throw. Honestly, I had more fun throwing the disc to Flash on the side than I did.
Just a little baby throws? Oh, that's hilarious.
That was more fun to me than doing the disc golf.
You know what's so funny? The first time, so Enzo was... not great at catching, and he was somewhere around 6 or 7 months when he caught his first disc.
Was
Which now is like embarrassing to me. Yes, and he did it
after. I don't remember that. I thought he was way younger.
No, he was like 6 or 7 months.
Well, Sketch, I don't know that he caught his first disc till he was like a year and a half.
It was when I took him to disc golf, and he was going crazy because he's seen the disc, and he did like the frisbee, but I was just doing rollers, and he was going bananas for it. And I kept saying, as soon as I get home, he's going to catch. And then I got him home and he caught that. So that's my little, but yeah, wait, what other disc sports are there? Ultimate?
We never
played that, or that. Double disc court or guts, or I kind of know all the different things, but
we're not disc people.
Not disc people.
And I kind of came from a dog background. Like in the way that I was like shot out the womb into the X-Pen with the Yorkies, like that way of, you know, dog background, you didn't really have either.
No, but I had sports backgrounds. We'll talk about that someday, okay. I'm sure. You know, yeah. But yeah.
Let's get back to our top three skills. So we went over it. Yours was drop, retrieval, and catching. And mine was
drop,
like quick switching, mentality. I don't know. Like there's a word for this. I just can't think of it right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to invent one.
Yeah. And then the third is catching, of course. So we've got two in common. The other is pretty similar.
Yes, it is pretty similar.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. Okay, so I guess we're not going to be battling this out. No big drama, no friend falling out over difference of opinion. This is going to be a boring episode then.
Except for catching is so fun.
Catching is fun. Well, so let's talk about drop. So do we think that's so important?
Well, I think you might be a little better saying why that's so important than me.
Do I have a therapy session scheduled after this? I have some trauma that's about to come out.
You might need it.
Okay. So let's just say my first three Frisbee dogs, who were all awesome, did not want to drop the disc for differing things. So Sketch was great in freestyle. This is part of I think why I love freestyle, is because I was able to play it with no challenge with Sketch, because he would drop one disc for another. But if you take them all away and you've got one disc left, like toss and fetch rules, he was a bugger. He didn't want to give it back. He was just, he would sit there at the line and he'd chew it.
And if back
you,
off
yeah, he would do the typical border collie thing. Like you try to grab it.
Take it, move it.
And just like, you know, we all do when we're beginning, we don't know anything. It's like we try to grab it back from the dog and it basically turns into a war.
It just makes it worse and compounds.
And I think once you realize you're never going to be faster than the dog, you realize it's never going to work doing that. So, yeah. So Sketch and I had trouble in toss and fetch, and that was always our demise in competitions. Because I couldn't get him drop, couldn't get the fifth throw off. I mean, he'd catch all four. If I threw him right in the zone, he'd catch him. He was always awesome. Yep. And that was our Achilles heel, man.
Yeah.
Getting that drop at the line. And it always, and we did get on a system where it was a friendly system. It was a positive system, but it wasn't a handoff. He still didn't give it back very fast. He basically stood at the line and kind of held, played with it 2 or 3 seconds. And it was consistent and I knew it was coming. And I could relax, but I never got it Sora or somebody super fast, a Muse or something like that, or Mark Faragoy's dog, Riley. It was never anything like that. So, and then Flash was the opposite. The whole thing was, okay, I didn't have the handoff with Sketch. That's all I'm going to work on. Oh, I'm not even going to do freestyle because I am so committed to getting this toss and fetch handoff. And so Little Flash had, you know, nice toss and fetch handoff. It wasn't great, but it was way better than Sketches. And I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be awesome. And then one day, he was probably over a year old. I brought out a second disc and he wouldn't drop it. He wouldn't let go of it. I couldn't do freestyle. It was such a pain. He would not drop one.
I'm laughing with you.
You can laugh now. It's funny now.
No, I felt bad for you.
It was not funny.
I felt bad for you.
And I was like, okay, so now this dog, I've got him to do a toss and fetch handoff, and I can't play freestyle with him.
Yes.
What do I do? This is ridiculous. And then, so I couldn't get him to drop in freestyle, and eventually I did, but it was real slow. It was very clunky. It took me forever. Eventually I did get Flash dropping in freestyle. We played freestyle and it was good, but there was a lot of things I couldn't do because he'd only drop in certain scenarios, and it was very specific. And then the third dog, just to put the nail in the coffin, she didn't drop in toss a fetch or freestyle. So it was like, you've got to be joking me. I don't have either. So it was like three times I couldn't get it. And then Torch came along and I was like, okay, drop. We're dropping one for another. We're dropping in my hand. We are dropping. We're dropping the disc. That's right, what we're doing. Torch, we're dropping it. And right. He did. And then Torch didn't have any issues. And then from then on, it was like, okay, drop.
So for me, I guess it was one of the big things was seeing so many other people having problems.
Oh, so you watched me have all the issues and you're like, I don't want to be like her.
So... yeah.
No, that's it, fair.
Even to this day, I will see somebody who's been in the sport for 30 years and I'll say, oh, how's your new dog doing? And they say, oh, it's great, but they won't drop the disc. And I just think they don't just do most of these things. If you get a dog that just happens to do all of those things and drops it and retrieves it and runs fast and catches everything, that's great. That is... Man, that's
always nice.
One in a thousand or something. I mean, I think especially too, to have it really good. I'm talking like,
well, I'm really good in multiple.
To be able to do
areas.
It,
so like even like my dogs, I'd have one that would drop in freestyle and not toss.
Right. So it's whether it's multiple
they
disc,
drop when you want to drop
dropping close,
anytime.
Dropping far away. I always teach them. I teach the drop so strongly that when I say drop, like if they pick up a chicken bone at the park, I say drop. They spit it out. Even Cheeky now, who's 7 months old. When we say drop, she just like has to get the thing out of her mouth. And I do this all with, I convinced her that she wanted to do it. And that's how I do with all my training.
So I'm going to bring Flair over to your house because if there's chicken bone, I mean, she'll drop the disc. She's wonderful about that. But chicken bone, it's swallowed before I could say drop. I know how to ask me how I know.
So the one thing about the dropping, I teach it with tugging. So at the same time I'm teaching dropping, I'm teaching a tug, which is teaching drive, to love the disc, bite the disc, grab the disc. I teach them, have them pull the disc out of my hand, let them take it from me. Well, now the fun's suddenly over, right? It's because they got the disc. Okay, well, then what's going to happen now? We're not playing anymore, so it's boring. So to teach the drop, dropping has to be fun. Mm-hmm. And it has to be two different ways. I want them to drop it in my hand for a handoff and toss and fetch or one of the games. And I want them to do it in freestyle away from me or close to me or wherever I want them to do it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when I say drop, I got like a little string attached to their mouth and they'll drop it. I think it's the thing I teach maybe the best and the strongest. I've never had the problem. So it's not like I'm coming from that point of view like you, but seeing the other people and I mean, you can't compete.
It makes it really, really difficult.
So difficult.
And so something you didn't mention that I'll mention that I feel is really important on the drop. And I kind of alluded to this earlier when I said I can make up for catching issues if they'll drop. And what I mean by that is like an example in freestyle is if I'm not worried about them dropping, if their dropping is exactly how it should be when I want it to be, it's kind of in the back of my mind. I'm not thinking about it at all because they're cueing off what I'm doing, which I automatically do. And they drop it at the correct time and I don't have to pay attention to it. So I can focus on making a well-timed throw and a good throw. If they're not dropping it soon enough usually it's soon enough, I can't make a good throw or I can't do it with good timing.
Well, that is so tough too, because another reason with that, just like exactly what you're saying, dogs are usually on some kind of arc mm-hmm. and usually turning or doing something. And if you're doing that and then you're going from headwind to crosswind to tailwind, that's going to screw your throw up
badly
too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if they hold on to it.
Because now all you're thinking about is them dropping it. And when they do, you get the next one out.
Absolutely.
And now it's like, I was going to throw a tailwind. By the time they did it, it's headwind.
Absolutely.
Now I screwed it all
up. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And the other thing is like your reaction once they do drop to throw the disc has to be quick because you don't want to just both be standing there staring at each other. That's also not going to look great. I mean, I think of it the same example is, you know, them kind of coming back to you, like even say I'm doing a passing sort of thing where they're coming from one end of the field and I'm going to throw them to the other end. If I'm not sure, if I'm kind of guessing if they're going to blow by me, because I don't throw the disc unless they drop it,
Right.
Because 99% of the time, if they have it in their mouth and you throw another one, they're not going to drop it and go get the next one. They're just going to hold the same one.
Even a dog that's trained really good with a drop, they probably won't drop it.
Yeah. So, but I'm standing there like, oh, got the second throw. I'm trying to guess, are they going to drop it? Are they not going to drop it? And then it's like, it's like a fire alarm. If they don't drop it, it's like, okay, now we're going to have a training moment out here. It just kind of, deflates the whole thing. So I can make up for a lot though, if they can't catch because I can time the throws right. And I can make a good throw because I'm not worried about the dropping.
Yeah.
I think Flair's a really good example of that. Not to out Flair on any of her weaknesses, but that's part of the reason why she's so good at freestyle is her drop is near perfect. It's near perfect. She never holds on to it too long.
Yeah, that's great. So for me, number two is retrieval. And I guess by retrieval, I mean retrieval speed. Primarily, I want them to just come back to me as fast as they possibly can.
Let's get more specific. It's not the actual bringing of the disc. It's the speed of it?
It is the speed, but I do want the disc in their mouth. That's how I train. Well, I train it without too because I do restrain recalls. Yeah. And that's the main thing I do. But then we incorporate the disc with that too. So, but I guess I want to see them coming back to me quick. What I don't want is for them to catch a disc and toss and fetch. They're out there 30 yards, drop the disc, and then haul ass back. That doesn't do me a whole lot of good. I want them to haul ass with the disc in their mouth. So I do want that disc to come back. Part of that goes into the handoff thing. It's sort of like with teaching the drop. I do it with drive building and tugging and all that kind of stuff. With the retrieval, the thing about that is that they put it in my hand, and we do the tug and all that kind of stuff, and then we go into a drop. So it all ends up really being connected.
It is.
So I kind of teach a get it, a drop, and a fast retrieve sort of all in a handoff, all that stuff, all together.
No, I do the same.
But if I break it down to the exact thing, I want to see them, whenever I call them, I want their head, like you're going to talk about, I want to see them turn and come towards me and no hesitation.
It's kind of very similar.
I want the speed. I want them to come back to me.
I'm just not as worried about them bringing it back. I think, especially in the beginning, because I think this is where the drop trauma comes in. Yes.
Gone into other areas for you.
Well,
I know.
So I've never had a dog that did not bring the disc back. Never. Never, ever, ever. Okay, so there
Enzo,
we go. So that's why it kind of makes
Sydney,
more sense. Those
are the two main ones. Those are the ones I really trained before, or didn't train.
Okay.
So both of them would just drop it wherever they were. Remember, like, Sydney had to run out sometimes to get the disc? Like, Robert Gutierrez style GT?
Oh, I remember that.
So I wanted to get a good
retrieve.
So
you have trauma from retrieval. I have trauma from drop. And that's why we're differing right here. No, I've never had an issue. I think it's the easiest thing to train out of everything. Everything foundational for them to carry the disc in their mouth back to you is the easiest thing. In fact, I don't even really train it because the whole training system that I use already incorporates it. Like it's already incorporated. So I don't have like a separate thing for teaching that. I just teach them come back super fast.
But as a skill, you don't think that's important? Because this is about what we think the most important skills are. Regardless of how much it takes to train it, I just think it's super important. Because in toss and fetch, if you don't have a dog with a fast retrieval,
the fast part's important. I agree with the fast part. I don't know. Maybe it is my trauma coming through. I don't know. I feel like it just comes so easy that if I have a young dog and that's the only thing they're not doing yet, I'm not so worried about it because I feel like it's going to come together pretty easily for them. I've never had a dog that doesn't bring it back. When we say top three, I was thinking top three skills to train. Like most
I do train. And you train it too. You do restrain.
Versus like which are important to the actual ability of the dog, right?
I was thinking
most important as a handler to train versus most important skill when you're watching a dog. Or like,
I gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I was kind of viewing it from a different lens because my opinion would change. Actually, my order would be different.
Yeah. Mine would be number one catching.
Yeah. Me too.
So
obviously,
but all of this stuff kind of blends together and they are all related. And
yes.
So
retrieval is important though. Especially quick retrieval. So for me, mine was kind of that quick switch focus, the ability to refocus and shift to the next trick or next behavior that they're going to do. And I think that's important because it makes everything go quicker. You have more flow. You can always get them to do, it's, I don't know, this is hard to explain. It's like it's, Sora is like my definition of this. It's so easy to get her to do and prepare for the next trick or the next behavior because her mentality shifts so quickly. Whereas like a dog like Volt is a great example. I feel like the processing wheel, like when you click a window or click something in your computer and it and the wheel comes up, the loading. Yeah, the loading wheel. That's what I feel like
loading.
with Volt sometimes. The loading wheel comes up and I'm like,
You know what's
Volt.
interesting is a little bit, I think the drop thing is incorporated into that.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
A lot of trauma there, Kirby. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, but hold on. So Flash didn't drop, but he did have that quick switching mentality. He just didn't do the dropping behavior. But outside of that, he was able to switch very quickly with what he was doing. But even like, so I could compare Torch and Sora in this area too. And Sora is so far ahead of Torch in that realm. That doesn't mean Torch isn't a great disc dog, but it makes it a lot easier for me anyway. If they're going to do that
Yeah.
kind of quick switching mentality, it's where I can kind of get quick multiples. I feel like there's just more potential with it if the dogs kind of have that skill. And I think that's also one that's a little bit more natural. It's hard to train. I think you can improve it, but it's really
Right.
hard to. Whereas I think a drop, you really can train that. They either do it or they don't.
Wait, so you're saying they either do it or they don't, but it's trainable?
I think the drop's more trainable. I think this like quick switching mentality is more like
I gotcha. It's
more
part of their
nature
makeup.
than yeah, it's
I
part of their
gotcha. I
makeup
gotcha. I
more than it
gotcha.
is.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So I think border collies are really prone to having that. And so maybe that's why it's also important to me is because like Sketch was like that.
Yeah.
And so I see that and I'm like, wow, that's so good. That makes things easier.
So yeah, I've seen like a lot of people say something like, "Oh, whenever I go to evaluate a dog or a puppy, I want to see them having a natural ability to drop or hand it off or do something like that." And I'm thinking, I don't even that stuff doesn't even enter my mind because, like you said, it's completely trainable.
Yeah.
So I don't worry about that kind of thing.
No, I'm not worried about that either.
That's a different discussion. But just the idea that I don't have any concerns about a dog dropping a disc because I know for sure if I get a puppy, they're going to drop perfect because I just
But
know how
I
to
think
train
that like
it.
refocusing thing is when I say refocus, it's not out of them not focusing and then too focusing, but focusing
Right, one thing
point
and
A,
another.
point B. That is a little bit of a nature thing. That's a little bit something they're born with.
Are dogs that are really good at multiples, is that something you connect with that?
Yeah.
And
That's very closely
I
connected,
don't
I
do
think.
much with multiples generally. I've done them. I'm not saying I don't do them. I don't have any problems with them, but I don't do it a whole lot. So
Yeah.
it's not something I pay too much attention to.
Oh, if you notice, like Torch, I rarely did a multiple with Torch. I mean, now I do like a little shuffle because he's old boy. But yeah, like Flash, I didn't really do well. When I did, it wasn't good. We did it, and it wasn't very good. But if I'm talking about what was good, I didn't really do that with Flash. I didn't really do it with Volt. But Sora, yeah,
Yeah,
she's quick.
right.
Sketch, oh gosh, yeah.
Oh, he
Sketch was all multiples
loved
because he's like
it.
bang, 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 bang,
He was
bang.
really fond of
And
that.
I think that's just kind of fun to see, fun to watch. It's a good skill. It's something not all dogs
Blitz was
can
good
do.
too, right? From what I remember, was she good at it?
She was okay, not like
I
Sketch or
remember she was
Sora.
quick with it, but I don't know if her
Well,
catching
you
was as
know
good on
what?
it.
You know what her issue was? It's the dropping.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think she did refocus, but then she lollygagged with a disc in her
Yeah.
mouth, and she was just having a good time. She's like, no, I got one.
Speaking of catching, do you want to talk about the catching?
Yeah, let's go into catching because
Do you want me to go first or you?
isn't it obvious? Do we need to even talk about it?
Yeah.
Duh, catching. I'm just
Catching
kidding.
is great. It's so fun.
You go first
Okay,
because I'll
so
probably say the same thing.
With the catching aspect, it of course is the most important thing about disc dogging on the dog side. Oh yeah, that's why you're there, right? You're there.
You don't get any points for not catching.
That's right. Well, in some organizations you do. You can get points without any catches, but that's a
okay. That's a different
that's
argument.
A different argument there, but
I think you're talking about rollers, to be clear here.
I'm also talking, you could just stand at the line and gain points in some organizations.
Okay.
I mean, that's odd.
Okay,
that's an odd one.
I did forget about that.
Yeah, you get rewarded for doing nothing. That's
okay.
Great.
So, but in general, so you don't, for the most part, you don't get points for not making catches. Like, you can't throw the disc and have a miss.
And then get credit for it.
And then get credit for it. That doesn't happen. Maybe a little bit in freestyle.
Freestyle, yeah.
But you better be doing something cool that they miss.
Right.
Or the dog jumped, you know, really incredibly.
Yes. I mean, if I'm judging, you got a zero on it. I'll just be honest with you.
I'm
harsh on
the catch ratio, too.
You need to have a catch. I hear people say, make sure you have at least 75%. Whatever trick you're going to do, it should be 75%.
Only?
And I think it should be 100%, meaning when you go out there, you're expecting it to be a catch. Every single trick that you do, I don't want 90%. I don't want 85%. I want everything to be a catch. And if it's not, you need to train harder yourself. Don't do it 10,000 times with your dog. You go out there and get your throws better for whatever trick or whatever you're doing, so you're perfect. Because if you're perfect, your dog's probably going to catch it. There's very, you know, it's just.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm maybe 95%.
So I.
but it's not 80%, that's for sure. It's definitely more like 95%.
So with the catching ass training, the skill, I train the dog to catch all different spins, different heights, different everything, even before they're very good at catching or even not catching at all. When they're 10 weeks old, they're going to start seeing a little disc thrown, even though I know they can't catch it probably or whatever. I want them to see it. I want to see them start to look this way for it, look that way for it, closer, further, whatever, all the different types of scenarios. And then as they get older and they start learning to catch, I'm immediately challenging them with catches. It might be something like a difficult one that they miss, a difficult one that they catch, and then an easy one for them. Kind of like that, mix it up, then throw it left-handed, right-handed, this type of throw, that type of throw. They start seeing butterflies early on, everything, every single type of throw. But I don't push them down their throat either. Meaning, let's say they're not very good at a butterfly or they're kind of afraid of it. A young dog can be a little afraid of it, not quite go for it because it can be scary when it's kind of flinging around all weird. If I notice that, it's just like they're not going to see that again for another 6 months probably. I just totally forget I even did that. Don't even worry about it. Let me move on.
I think there's ways you can do it where it just makes it a little slower or, you know.
Of course.
You know, I'm trying to scare them.
But with just every type of throw, if I see something that they're particularly having problems with, like let's say that if I do a left-handed throw and just from that angle they're just not doing a great job with it, I'm not going to give them one after another, after another, after another, after another.
Not when they're young.
That's going to really start reinforcing sadness with them, maybe.
Well, you don't want them to,
you don't want them to
get disappointed,
discouraged. Yeah. You don't want them to. So I do try to make it fun. And even by mixing in those ones that I pretty much know they're not going to catch when they're young, I'm still going to mix them in there just so they see them. Just maybe not go over the top.
Yeah, I pretty much do the same thing. The only time I didn't do this was with Torch, which looking back now was sort of a mistake, but at the time I was not very good at throwing in a way that I could be sure of where it was going to go. Like I could throw it and like it might be catchable for a really good catching dog, but with Torch he was really unsafe when he was young.
Yeah,
so I did kind of lean towards a lot of backhands, and I never did left-handed because it would be not a good throw. I wasn't as good of a thrower when I had him as a puppy. So I didn't want him to get hurt. So I kind of erred on the side of safety and I did a lot of backhands, and that came to bite me later on because he didn't want to do left-handed throws. Like he looked at me like I was an alien when I did left-handed throws. He was like, what are you doing? Like I really struggled to get him to go after left-handed throws and like some of the other grips and stuff because he was like, this isn't how we play. What is this?
And like, I can see that I've seen that with certain dogs with upside down throws too.
Yeah, they don't get it.
Right. And they're like, I have no idea how to do that. So my dogs see upside down too.
Yeah, when they're a puppy, they're not.
Everything's
new.
Exciting and they just
everything's
go.
New,
they don't have an opinion really.
No, they're just like, whoa, that's new. That's different. Like, everything's new, so right. nothing's shocking to them.
Right.
And then as they get older, you know, maybe you come up with a new throw, but it's no surprise. They're like, eh, I've seen something kind of like that before.
Well,
eh,
whatever, you've already,
just in the air, I'm going
to
go.
With the way we train and play with them, we've thrown out so many different things to them that it kind of doesn't matter.
They're
what
like,
you
oh,
do.
It's a Frisbee.
Yeah.
I'm going to go get it. So, so now I kind of know that. I never thought of it that way. Even if I did know it, I don't know that I really could have done much different at that time with Torch because I wanted to make sure he was safe, number one. But now that I know that and now that I can throw better, I definitely think about that when I'm playing right. with, you know, young dog or puppy. So they
I
see everything.
If you have a dog that's really dangerous doing things like that, or if you don't have the skills to be able to throw all over the place in a controlled way, that can be a different situation. So number one, you have to be safe.
Yeah, with absolutely.
The dog, and that
absolutely.
Is the number one thing.
Well, so, and another thing I wanted to bring up, which is kind of cool about our catching, is we'll kind of swap dogs when they're young and stuff and let them play freestyle with each other. And this is, we also do pairs, so some of it is for that, but some of it's also like, you do some throws that I don't typically do, and I do some throws you don't typically do. Like, one that comes to mind is like, you do the chest mac. I almost never do that. So my dogs would never see it if not for you. So we're kind of lucky in that way that, you know, I trust you to play with them and not, you know, have them land on their head or something.
Right.
And
something you did, this is going to be leading into our talking about Cheeky and Link.
Yeah.
But when I saw you playing with Cheeky the very first time you saw her, you were doing a lot of really, 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 really short throws.
Oh yeah, multiple
things. Multiples. And I don't do multiples. I'm not saying I don't do a little throw like that now and then, but you were very focused on doing that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it is really good. And as soon as you did that, I was like, I even said it at the time.
Yeah.
I said, I need to do more of that.
Yeah.
Because I saw her kind of like a little light bulb come on and she kind of liked it.
Yeah,
she was like,
oh,
whoa, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. And in a whole session, she might see like one of those from me.
Right.
And you did 10 in a matter of like 10 seconds.
Right, exactly.
So
it's kind of good to, if you have somebody that you know and trust, I always think it's good too, just to get the dogs kind of playing with other people. And maybe this is coming from somebody, I mean, I don't do it so much now, but I used to do like kids' birthday parties and stuff. And part of the birthday party show was, you know, at the end, the birthday kid would throw the Frisbee to the dog. And that was always their favorite part that like always made the kids' day. That was so much better than like anything, any trick I could have done, even though they love that. Their favorite is always throwing the disc to the dog. So I kind of like think of those sort of, you know, I have like a big overview of that. Thinking, I kind of think anybody should be able to play with my dogs. Maybe they won't play as good as they play with me, but maybe they should be able to play with somebody else.
I love the idea of making, trying to get the dogs to be very well rounded.
Yeah.
In whatever way that might be.
And absolutely.
And this is a perfect example for catching is other people playing with them, your friend playing with your dog a lot, doing pairs, toss and fetch, even if you aren't going to be competing or something like that. You can have your kid play with you or your wife or husband or just your best friend down the road and say, hey, let's alternate throws.
Yeah, exactly. You never know. I mean, you have kids or, you know, you get married or whatever. You've got people in your life that come in, maybe your nephew, niece or whatever. I mean, we've even had like at our competitions, we've had some parents show up with kids that they didn't have a dog and they needed a dog to play with. And a lot of times it's been my dogs playing with them. Like Blitz was always a go-to dog
I
for
remember.
Kids to play with because, you know, she wasn't going to bite him. She was really sweet. She was just a nice dog.
Right.
And she was slow enough that, you know, they could get the throws out in front of her and she could kind of catch some, you know, wonky throws. So
she could. That's one thing about her. She wasn't great at catching.
She couldn't catch a throw.
Unless it was something ridiculous. Then she was like, it might hit her head and flip over and she'd catch it.
The worse the throw was, the better she was at catching it. It was so funny.
Yeah, I love playing with her because I could just do every ridiculous thing. I got like a lot of crazy stuff I could do. I would just pull everything out and make things up on the spot. And even if she didn't catch it, she tried as hard as she could, which was fun. So she was way into it. And the more weird things you did, her eyes would start popping out of her head.
Yeah, her bug eyes would come out. But yeah, I think that's kind of an important part of the sport too. Maybe that's just kind of like a personal thing, but I think it's good to be able to have a dog that, hey, look, you should try it too. Maybe it inspires a kid to go do it, to get their own dog. I mean, I know I think there's a couple youth players now that they started, and I don't want to call them out by name, but I know one in particular. I believe he started because somebody loaned him a dog to play with. He really wanted to do it. I don't think they had a dog that played, and it was maybe a family friend or something, had a dog and let them play, and that kid was so into it. And now he's like, that's super really cool. Into it because somebody let him play with their dog, and I think that's so, so good for the sport. So I, that's just one it of is. The reasons I really like being able to have like a well-rounded dog that can just play with somebody.
Right. And in addition, a huge thing for competition is if they're well-rounded and catching, they can catch a lot of different things. If you go out there and there's some kind of wind conditions or some kind of conditions, I am going to have a throw or two or something in my freestyle routine that's going to look just like how you normally throw it to them, most likely. If there's some kind of crazy conditions, it's not going to look like my normal throw because maybe the wind's pushing it down more, is it going faster.
You're saying my throws are bad?
No.
I'm just kidding.
Going at a different angle. So I want that moment when I'm in the world championships and I'm putting everything out there and I get a throw that's not absolutely perfect, I hope it maybe looks a little bit like yours or somebody else's.
You're saying my throws aren't perfect? No. You're digging that hole. Come on. Come on, Jake.
I'm going to try to get out of
it. Tell me how bad my throws are.
No, it's because
I know what you mean. The throws can, you
know, I've seen it so many times where someone goes out there and toss and fetch and they throw totally different from me. And there'll be certain conditions and I'll see a throw and I'll say, that looks exactly like my throw. Whether it was good or bad, it looks exactly like my throw. But when I'm out there with my dog and they happen to see something that just looks different, I want them to hopefully be like, oh, I've seen that before. Just be a little bit more familiar with it. That's that well-rounded thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I've even had some people that were not as good of throwers throw to like Sora just because they're not as good a thrower. So it was a good opportunity for her to play like with my mom, you know, to kind of get experience doing that and seeing different throws, just like you said, whether they're good or bad, but it's good to see different types of throws.
Or even different, even if it's not good or bad, there's throws are just, it's just different.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. No, I absolutely agree. It's good for them to get that kind of whole picture. Because if they only play with you, that's all they're gonna know.
And Cheeky's my current puppy right now, 7 months old. And we talked a little bit about it. And that's been probably one of the most important things is how you've interacted with her. It's actually helped a lot. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. I'll take her anytime.
It's fun too.
I'll take her anytime, man. That dog.
It's never
she's
like,
so funny.
It's never work whenever we play with each other's dogs. It's like so exciting. Yeah. Like, you know, I get to play with like whether it be Torture, Sketch, you know, or Link or Sora or Flair or Volt.
Oh, you love playing with Volt. How many times has he bitten your finger?
And Blitz, of course. Yeah. He's Volt's bitten me a couple times, not intentionally.
Volt's not the dog I let people play
He's
with.
Not real accurate with he's his bite accurate. Sometimes, or he's not paying attention. He thinks he's supposed to grab the
he's
disc.
He's not paying attention.
And I have
he doesn't
slightly,
mean it.
I also have slightly different mannerisms as you, so.
I know when to get my fingers out of the way.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going on. And so. So what about Link?
Linky boy. Link's so almost fun. Two.
That
Can't
is
believe
crazy.
That.
He's still a puppy.
He's like two
he's
going
be the
on
forever
6 months.
Puppy.
No, he's not.
He's not.
He's not. He's
don't let him know. Don't say it.
Well, I won't say it. He doesn't know what that means. But it will be coming. It will be coming.
And he won't be.
He won't know. Sorry, Link.
You missed the joke.
Maybe I missed it. Maybe I just chose to ignore it. Isn't this a family-friendly podcast, Jeff?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
That's why we just go, right?
Anyway, so that explains how Link's training's going. No.
That's it.
Link's awesome.
Oh,
no,
so fun.
He's, I think he's actually really smart. I think he's kind of a sleeper. He's kind of the dark horse, I think.
Hmm.
I think he's really good. I don't know if anybody believes me yet. I think he's really good. You know, a lot of people have asked me, oh, how's Link doing? Usually my response is something about his personality. and how funny he is and how sweet he is and how social he is.
He is so sweet.
And not about this.
The most important thing is all of those things you just mentioned.
It is. And then usually whoever asks me that, their response is, so what you're telling me is he's not very good at Frisbee.
He is.
He actually really is. Okay, so I went out today, and before you came over, because I had to wear him out, because otherwise he would just want to weasel up in your face the whole time, and he'd be insufferable. So I had to wear him out. So we did some catching practice, which I haven't done with him lately, and I threw like all different angles, all different kinds of throws, high, low, all these different things. And I probably did around 20 throws with him. And granted, they were short, but I think he only missed one.
Wow, that's awesome.
I mean, he was catching from different angles, you know, judging the disc really well.
That's
He's great at tracking, which I had to train a little bit. He didn't want to track naturally. He wanted to kind of put his head down and run. But I do know the breed tendency is kind of to do that. They don't have as much eye as
you know,
a border collie.
I've seen, when you said that, the first thing I thought of was Flash. Not because it was a good tracker. He actually was really good. But
well, he didn't watch it on the way down.
See that when he would start running, he just put his head down like this, and you would just see the pop of his head, and he would just, I mean,
I don't like that if I can avoid it.
I know, but it's just interesting you said that.
Muse did the same thing, and she ended up still being awesome. So it doesn't mean they can't be good if they do that.
Just don't throw it behind her.
It does drive me a little crazy, though, when they take off for a throw and they're not looking at it. Like, that's one thing I just love about Sora, man. Her eyes are just glued onto the disc, and it gives me some comfort. I'm like, oh, she's watching it. She, like, never loses a disc because she's watching it. So Link had that tendency to start out, was just put his head down and run, you know, don't watch it, just get out there. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you're not gonna have any trouble getting out there, my friend. Like, his legs are a million miles long. He's so fast, and he might be my fastest dog. He's really, really quick.
Well, I was gonna say that I have a couple things I'm gonna say I think are the best about Link, and then you can say a couple things.
Oh, that's
about
a good idea.
Cheeky. So I'm going to say number one ability of Link is his speed.
Oh, God, he's fast.
And I'd
even
say,
when he's not fast, he's fast.
I know.
When he's not trying, he's fast.
He doesn't need to try. That dog is
But when
phenomenal.
He does, I remember there's been a couple times in the park you've thrown to him. And you're like, oh,
I'm sorry.
Dang it. You're like, sorry, Link. I'm like, keep watching, Jeff.
And there
like,
he goes. And he catches it. Yeah.
And he just, boom, he gets there. And you're like, what?
And then number two is catching ability, because I think he's really good at catching. And number three, this has nothing to do with Frisbee, is how sweet he is. And even though it has nothing to do with Frisbee, I'm just throwing it in there because
I think it does have to do
maybe
with Frisbee.
A little bit, but I just love him so much.
If he didn't like
so cool.
people, or he was concerned with
well,
people.
That's true. He could look like he's nervous
could,
out there or something.
He could look nervous. Yeah, he could not be comfortable. He could actually be nervous.
So great.
He could be distracted by people in a bad
another
way.
Another skill set is being sweet.
Yeah. I think it's helpful. I mean, I really do look at the whole big picture on that sort of thing. I like the whole package. So I feel like Link has that. I think Link's slow to mature. He's a boy. So I'm gonna just talk a little bit more about...
Have I matured?
I'll get to Cheeky, but I'm going to talk about Link and just some of his weaknesses, just to put him out there. He's just a little bit slow to mature. And I think I'm not bothered by it because Flash is the same way. And Flash turned out spectacular. And when Flash kind of grew into his own at about 3-4 years old, whew, he was killer. And I think Link's just not there yet. Like, he's dumb boy. And he's just a dumb, big dumb boy. But he's got all those talent pieces. Like, he's got a lot of the talent pieces. He hasn't put them all together yet. Like, he's still processing a little bit. And he's very much a thinker. He's not balls to the walls. He's not going to do something he doesn't know is going to work. He wants to be accurate. He wants to know 100%. Oh, look who's coming out. He's like, you said balls to the wall. Torch came over. He's like, you must be getting ready to talk about me. I mean, Torch would just fling himself without thinking. He's like, let's go, guys. Yeah. And Link's like, nope, I got to think about it. So I do like that part of him. I know he's thinking about it, and he is improving. So I'm like, okay, that's good. As long as he keeps improving. Oh, he said his name too much. Now he's like, what is it? So Is there anything you want to add to Link, and then we'll kind of go into Cheeky?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Man, Cheeky, return speed. she's really quick.
She is.
She's really quick.
She had, that's kind of natural for her. She was just kind of did it pretty quick, but
yeah.
I reinforced it a lot. So who knows where it would have been if I didn't do that?
Right. You know, it's I hard to say. Like she would have been but, quick, but she, obviously she's going to be quicker like, reinforced by it.
It's like almost over the top because she's so young and she, her legs are and growing a million little. Miles per second and she's tiny.
She's really small. How much does she weigh?
27.
That and makes her sound bigger than she looks.
And she hasn't
though.
Changed in about a month.
She's little.
So.
She little. She's so tiny, especially compared to Link. When they stand next to each other, she looks really tiny. She's very quick for her size, for sure. And I think her catching ability is really good, too.
It's surprisingly good for a small dog, you know, with a little mouth and stuff. She doesn't have a very big mouth.
She's got teeth. I mean, have you, like, rubbed her little teeth?
Cheeky does have cheeky.
She's so funny. She's so funny. Gosh, this is going to just sound like a repeat, but it's like, I like her sweet personality, too. I think she's really well-rounded as a dog. Like,
she is. She's very stable.
Yeah, she's really stable. I think that stuff is underrated. I think being stable is so, so important. I mean, there is a lot of times that really comes to help you is the dog being stable.
Well, it makes it a lot easier because everybody's seen the dogs, and I'm not criticizing it, but a dog where somebody just has to keep them put away, and then they come out just to do their rounds.
We've had those issues.
They come out, they do their round, you put them back in, and the whole time you're stressing out about it. Are they going to do this or that on the field or go after someone or see something that's going to distract them or make them mad or whatever? And you're worrying about that versus having a dog where it's just like you're just hanging out at the sidelines. When they call your name, you're relaxed. You can go out. You don't need to think about you don't need to micromanage them.
No, I didn't have to worry. Man, that was like one thing with Torch. He just was like, okay, let's go. You want to shoot off fireworks over there? Okay, let's go play.
and that was the interesting thing, but like Enzo had this, when he was not on the field, he had issues.
Yeah.
And he was reactive and things like that. But as soon as he knew that I had the Frisbee, he did not care.
Yeah.
He was anything totally cool. else going on in the world. I always was.
Yeah, Flair's like that too.
Had this dreadful feeling when I'm out there if another dog runs on the field. And he wasn't aggressive. He would never go after another dog. But he'd, you know, start snarling, and he was pretty small.
If they kind of came up to him.
Yeah, or... and then I'm worried a bigger dog's going to hurt him or something like that because he's going to go, do all that stuff. But it's happened, and he did not care at all. Even when he was hurting before and another dog got into the ring and was, like, hurting with him, he's just like, okay, we're like a teammate now.
Yeah.
It was so strange. So it was actually a good thing. It worked out well for him to be able to compete because that was, like, the one time he felt comfortable seemed in his life.
Yeah.
Like, he could go out in the field and do it.
I remember Blitz even was, like, not super comfortable in the beginning.
Right.
Because she had some dogs go after her and stuff. It took a little bit of time.
She was definitely nervous.
And then she got back to it, and then she was super happy. I mean, there were points where I was like, well, I don't want to put her out there if she's going to be, you know, not happy.
Yes.
But then she would improve. So I was like, okay, I think she's getting out of it, you know. And then I just really had to manage watching, you know, other dogs and other people. And, you know, it's what we do at events, right? And, so she ended up loving it. So... back to Cheeky. Is there anything else we want to talk about with Cheeky? That's it?
Well,
she's just awesome.
She's awesome. She's so fun. She's cute. I love her. And she's adorable, and she has a lot of drive. And it's only 7 months, so it's like,
you know, it's hard to.
I don't know a lot.
She's doing really good for 7 months.
She is.
Yeah.
And I'm doing slow with her. I only train her about twice a week, like an actual Frisbee session twice a week. And then early on, whenever she was a lot younger, it was once every couple of weeks, I would just do something with Frisbee, and the rest of the time, just kind of real simple foundation stuff. And Jen does a lot of her foundation because she's going to be more of a agility dog probably because she's more attached to Jen. But
we'll see. I don't know. She's pretty darn good at Frisbee. She's going to do both.
Yeah. So did Key.
Yeah.
And Enzo was, you know, really good in both. So.
Yeah, I think Cheeky's going to be really good in both. That's what I'm That's what I'm thinking.
But whatever she wants to do, if she just decides she just wants to do agility, that's fine. I'm okay with it. Whatever she likes.
What's cool, though, is that Cheeky and Link are, like, total besties.
They are. Oh,
and
man.
And they love each other. Link finally won her over.
It's dangerous to put them out by themselves because you get they'll run just over. Go. They go. And it's like, scary for us. It's
and
scary
the bigger
for them
the
running.
Area,
yeah, they'll just go.
The bigger the circle.
They really love each other.
Oh, my gosh.
It's cute to watch them together. Their personalities are so similar that they're pretty outgoing and things like that. And
yeah.
Stuff doesn't really bother either of them. You know, they're mm-hmm. just...
They're both pretty well-rounded. They it's are. Kind of funny. They have a lot of similar strengths, and they're both pretty well-rounded.
And one's about this big, and then the other one's...
gigantic. Okay, we say Link's gigantic. He's really not that big. He's smaller than Torch.
Okay, well, Torch is like a little pony.
No, he's not. Torch is little. Flash was big. Flash has 10 pounds on Link, almost.
Wow, that's crazy.
I wish Flash was still around. We could, like, compare the size, but Flash is definitely a lot bigger than Link, for sure.
So do you have anything else to finish off?
Oh, man. I mean, we could talk about Foundation stuff forever,
yes.
Probably. I mean, there's so,
oh,
so
geez.
Much.
Like, any honorable mentions that didn't make the list for you?
What do you mean?
The things that we didn't, you know, that weren't in our top three that
oh.
you think was, like, right there or anything?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think something that's really underrated and that now we need with direction that Freestyle's going more than ever is the dog's comfortability with you touching them and holding them
oh,
and moving them in different positions
ideas.
And stuff. I think that's something that's underrated. And maybe it was not so important, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago doing Freestyle, but a lot of these newer, innovative, different moves really require the dog to be comfortable with you holding them in all kinds of positions. Being able to touch you, you know, anywhere. I
right.
mean, I see dogs, you know, I've seen that trick where the dog's standing on your forearms kind of thing. And, you know, if your dog's, maybe your dog does a back stall, but they're not used to touching you on
yes,
your arms
that's,
or something.
That's a really good point.
So there's kind of that mutual dogs being okay with
mm-hmm.
touching you and them being, you know, happy about you carrying them and holding them, those sorts
right.
of things. So I think that's something that's, I call it a foundation skill because I teach it. I do it with treats. I hold them in different positions and treat them in those positions to try to get them to be comfortable when they're a little puppy. Another reason to train when they're little puppy too, because it's easier to hold them when they're little.
I guess one I would add would be all different types of discs.
Oh, that's a good one.
Materials, weights, different brands, sizes. Of course, when they're real young, you can't use a full-size disc, but you start out with the pup discs and then, you know, maybe a Jaws and an Atom, and you could start bringing in like a Sonic and then Supersonic, and you could do the Hyperflex version of the pup disc, all those, and then as they get bigger, start incorporating fastbacks and things like that. And I always play with all of the different brands because I never know what's going to happen. Are they going to just decide one day they want to play with a different type of disc? Is it just going to be better? Am I going to get better at throwing a certain kind of disc? I don't know.
Or depending on the event, you're required to use.
Sometimes you're required
discs,
to use certain discs. It could be whether it's the quad,
Skyhounds,
IDC. They all have requirements for disc brands or weights or types or
yeah. There's
whatever.
Limited options where
right and
you
USDDN used to have a lot of restrictions, but now it's pretty much open to anything.
Yeah.
So that one doesn't count quite as much. I'd say UFO and USDDN are pretty much
similar.
Anything you want to play with.
AWI too.
And AWI, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, USDDN was about 10 years ago maybe that they
kind of switched
that.
And they let
right.
kind of everything fly.
Right. And then UpDog allows pretty much
I think
anything.
They pretty much allow anything that doesn't, this dog
doesn't have a,
doesn't
I think
have
does have
a hole,
hole
right?
in the middle.
Yeah.
And of course, if you come out to one of our events, the novice division,
we pretty much let you play.
You
with
can
whatever,
play there
as long
as
it's safe.
Safe yeah.
yeah,
like a floppy disk. A floppy disk is not allowed in competition generally, but in a novice or intermediate, we're always okay with it.
Sure. Yeah. Whatever gets somebody to get their foot
yes.
in the door and come play.
Yes.
yeah, I think that kind of that wraps
that's
it
awesome.
Up. I mean, we can. Trust me, we could go on and on, but maybe that's another day of talking about
yes.
foundation
yeah.
training. So.
Thanks for joining us. I hope you guys
yeah,
liked
thanks
it.
For joining us.
Got any ideas for us? Let me know. There's doggy here. Just attack me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I hope you liked it, and see you next time.
All right.